Support for WPR comes from 4imprint, providers of promotional products for businesses, including embroidered apparel, trade show items, and logoed business gifts. More is at 4imprint.com. 4imprint, for certain.
Support for WPR comes from the Madison Museum of Contemporary Art, an independent organization dedicated to creating experiences that educate, reflect, and inspire. More is at mmoca.org.
My uncle told me when I was 7 years old, you're the man of the house. You got to take care of your mother and your sister and your baby brother, like, at seven. And I just want to go play. I didn't want to go outside and play. Like, and he told me that. I was like, what does that mean?
This is Ashanti Branch. He's a high school teacher and mentor in Oakland, California. And when he first started teaching, he noticed that a lot of the boys at his school were kind of checked out. They weren't going to class, they weren't doing their work, and the majority of them weren't graduating. So Ashanti did something that seemed at first pretty simple. He started an after-school club for boys. And in that club, he pushed them to take off what he calls the male mask. The Ever Forward Club is now 10 years old. It's in a dozen or so schools in the Bay Area, and it's had a pretty astonishing success rate. More than 90% of the Ever Forward boys have gone on to college. Ashanti says in his experience, that's because the mask of masculinity handicaps boys.
You know, the mask is, it's a thing that we show the world. Like when we walk out to our homes to go and live our day, to work, to school, to play, to whatever things we do, like we, most people, they're clear that they have a mask that they show the world. And they're clear that they have a part of themselves that they don't talk about. Sometimes they don't talk about it ever. And so I think that with a lot of our young men, this idea, like, let me just show everybody that I'm happy, funny, cool, athletic, you know, intelligent, smart, hard, you know, whatever the characteristics that they show. And then there's that stuff sometimes that is just like, people couldn't handle this stuff. People couldn't handle knowing that I'm dealing with sadness or fear or depression. And also, in our society, there's not a lot of respect for a man who's afraid or who's sad. Mm-hmm. Or who's feeling like some kind of shame and guilt. Like, they're not looked up to, because most of the figures that our society highlights are those who are always powerful, dominating, controlling, and those kind of things. And so I think that some of our work is helping our young men have a safe place so that they can talk about the stuff that's really happening, all of it. So when they go out back to the world, they're not like built up all this pressure that's waiting to explode. And that's what I think sometimes happens with a lot of our young men.
So for you personally, I mean, what was the mask you grew up wearing, and how did you adopt it? And at what point did you realize it was getting in your way?
Oh, man. I think growing up, I'll say middle school was where there's like a lot of transformation was happening. You know, I knew that in my head, I thought I was kind of smart. But in middle school, it's not cool to be smart. And so my mask was like getting sliding by. Whatever, I don't care about this. No, I didn't do the homework because I didn't want to. And so I think it wasn't until this one teacher pulled me aside and really, you know, adjusted my thinking, you know, because I was dealing with a lot of sadness. You know, my father died before I was born. I was dealing with all this internal pain that I couldn't really talk about, because who do you cry out to about the fact that you're sad every time you see a father like picking up his son from school? Like, mm-hmm. when you see a father come to back to school night, like who do you talk to about that? Like, they were my friends, couldn't talk to them about it. So I just had to hold it, and I had to pretend like it didn't really exist.
What did this teacher say to you that changed?
Yeah, you know, she said, she had a speech, right? She was talking for about a long time. I don't remember much of it. I do remember one sentence. So I was like staring at the corner. I'm not going to look at her, right? Because if she's lecturing me, I'm just not going to ignore her. But she said, I know you're sad. And that's the only reason I started listening. Because she was like, what? You can't call me sad. I'm a black boy from Oakland. Like, the one thing I cannot be is seen as sad. So I look, because I'm about to rebuttal her statement. And she's like, I know you're sad that your father died before you were born. And I was like, whoa, now you're talking my business. What's going on here? So I'm looking at her in her eyes. I'm like, how dare you, right? Because now I'm ready to like go in rage. Like, I'm getting angry. I am sad, but I don't want people to know it. And she said, you know, but life doesn't give you what you want. Life gives you what you get. and you got to make the most out of it. And that sentence, like, is what I remember changing my life. You know, so you're too smart to be acting like you're not. And I don't know if it was the next day or a few days later, but I remember teachers coming up to me saying, what's going on with you? Like, you're doing work. Like, you're paying attention. Like, you're showing, like, I'm like, it never was that I couldn't do the work. I didn't care.
You know, that thing the teacher said to you, she named a feeling and kind of called it out for you, a feeling you didn't want to address. You said, the one thing a black boy from Oakland cannot be is sad. Like, why?
Yeah, because it's vulnerable. It's actually, it's dangerous. Like, if you're walking around sad as a young man, you're seen as weak. And if you're seen as weak, you're seen as opportunity for prey. So my mode of the just automatic. It wasn't even like I had planned to be like, I don't want her saying I'm sad. As soon as she said it, I was like clued into her words because I needed to like clear it up. I needed to like, no, I'm not sad. I'm mad, right? Because mad is okay. Mm. Like I tell young men sometimes, you know, you got three emotions that are okay, acceptable. You got anger, you got funny, and then you got I don't care. Those are the ones that kind of like are okay and kind of tolerate it. But when you start delving into the other emotions, I think most of our young men, our young men know that there's certain things that you have to just kind of keep tucked away. And so that's what when we talk to them about taking off the mask, we're like, well, look, until society is ready for us as men to be everything we are, that means be able to show every emotion that we that possess, until they're ready, we're going to create a safe space for you to do it here. Because I believe, and what we do in Ever Forward, we believe that that pressure of building up, of trying to pretend that you don't feel, is why our prisons are filled with 90% men, 93% men. Like, statistically, you would think that just men are bad. But I think it's something else. I think there's a lot more to it, is that men don't usually have a safe space of navigating those human emotions that would allow you to release them.
I was watching this documentary that showed you working with some young men, and they were all kind of sitting in a circle. And I think you gave them each a drawing of a mask. So can you describe the exercise and then tell us what happened after you did the exercise? How do the boys respond? What changes?
Well, you know, when they were coming to film, I told them that this circle I meet with, they're really great at young men, but they don't always are not really honest about how they're doing. So the mask activity, which is part of the Taking Off the Mask workshop, has evolved a lot since the documentary, but they had this mask and they wrote on the outside, what are the things they let people see? What are those things that they let people see about them? And then I asked them to turn it over and think about the things they don't let people see. And then when they had the chance to like exchange them around, you see in the documentary, they were throwing them at each other. But when they opened up one, they ended up with somebody else's, and when they read off the front, oh, I show the world that I'm happy, I'm funny, maybe someone on the front said, I show the world that I'm angry. But then on the back, most of them were just like fear, sadness. That was the first time they had opened up. So I was sitting there, you know, the cameras are there. I'm like, oh man, like it, I was hoping it worked, but I didn't know because I never got them to open up. Like they were always saying like they were good. Oh, I'm good. Everything's good. I scale from 1 to 10. I'm a 10. I'm like, but they're not.
Did anything change after that? Like the next time they came in, did they just cover it all up again? Or did you see conversations happen as a result that you wouldn't have seen before?
Oh, no. There was a lot of transformation in that space. Those who were at the taping that day, they had begun to build a deeper community. The ones who didn't show up, they're like, what happened? What's going on? And they're like, dude, you missed it, you know? You missed it, you, right? And so our meetings began to get a little deeper, and a lot of those young men, you know, went on to, you know, at least do some incredible things.
So paint me a picture of what it's like for a young man to get out of those boxes. Tell me about one young man who you've mentored, who's been in your program, and what changed for him as a result of being able to say and talk about being sad or feeling grief or whatever, and have other guys around him be able to hear it and say it's okay.
Yeah, there's so many stories. I think I'll speak to one which is really near and dear to my heart. So Lorenzo, who now has come full circle, he now is a mentor forever forward. He is one of our first employees. He's a program officer for us. When I first met him, he was funny, seriously funny, very charismatic, but not doing so hot in school, not deeply connecting to who he was and what the potential he had in him. And really, when he came to Ever Forward, he says when he first came, he came because there was free food, right? He came because there was free lunch. And, you know, he was living on couches from people. He was like homeless for a lot of times, living in different family members. And some of the things I didn't know because he never told me till later. But he would be at meetings, but not deeply engaging. And kind of confused as to why anybody would care about him that's not his family. Like when I would see him out of class, when he's supposed to be in class, I'm like, dude, go get your behind the class. He'd be like, why do you care? Right? I'm like, what are you talking about? Why do I care? Like, I in my mind, I'm thinking, because I do. I don't know. There's no really reason. Like, because it's not part of my job to care about you outside of my classroom, but I do. And so I think it was for him to come to that place. And finally, when we went on our first college trip, we were at the beach, and the students went out and did their reflection, and they do a little quiet time. And I went over to him, and he was just, you know, there in the sand. I don't think he'd ever been to the beach before. And he was just crying, you know. And I said, what's going on? He's like all this time in my life, he didn't realize that there was a place where he could just be accepted for who he was and be around other students who were really just pushing him to be better. Like not only just accepting you for who you are, but also saying, but who do you want to be? Like, what else? It's just been a pleasure watching him grow and watching him get on track and then go off to college. Being first generation college student, then becoming back to be a mentor for Ever Forward, and then now working for us. I think, and there's more stories. There's so many stories of young men who have finally awakened themselves to the fact that they're human. Man, it's just amazing to watch it happen.
Ashanti Branch is the founder and executive director of the Ever Forward Club in Oakland, California. It works with at-risk teenage boys. More than 90% of the kids who've taken part in that club have gone on to college. Ashanti is also featured in the recent documentary, The Mask You Live In. You can check that out on our website at ttbook.org.